what you need to pick you up.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Elle Black. I'm an alcoholic.
Wow.
A few basics, but foundational and important to my recovery that I'll mention right off the bat. I have a sobriety date. It's October 24th, 2008. I have a sponsor named Lynn H. Anybody in this room heard of Lynn H.? I'm really grateful for the guidance and her influence in my recovery this past year. I have a home group. It's called the Good Morning Group. It's Reston, Virginia, which is just down the street from Tyson's, Vienna, and we meet 6 days a week. I have service there on Friday. I sponsor sponsors. So just some important things that I'd like to hear from a speaker. So I want to thank you so much, Billy Hill and the Blue Ridge Speakers Group. I'm getting to know some of your faces and names even from attending the annual event. And just thank you for having me. It really is an honor and a privilege. I do believe deep in my heart to be asked to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, because you all save my life every single day. And like I said, I'm really grateful to Lynn for being in my life and feeling like just more and more have this like home away from home here. But Lynn and I talk every Tuesday, and she's taken me back through the book, whether I like it or not. And of course, I like it. Dave's sitting here in the second row. Dave is my partner. He's my running buddy in AA, and he got me down here safely today, which I really appreciate. And you don't know what you don't know. Like when I met Dave 10 years ago, I was quite active in Alcoholics Anonymous, going to 5, 6 meetings a week. Usually, if I weren't at a meeting another day, I was at another, on certain days, I was at another 12-step program. But Dave really did introduce me to more of this, like where you and I listened to a lot of speakers. I used to like walk to work and I'd listen to like just good old-fashioned iPod. Seems old-fashioned now, iPod speakers. I think Lynn has like cassette tapes, right? Sorry. But Dave introduced me to this world of AA, where we travel, we go to hear other speakers, and I'm really appreciative of that. That's how I first met Billy Hill and Lynn at the Buckingham Group Conference. So I also want to thank so much some women online. I'm not gonna I can kind of see your names. Oh, they're smiling. Thank you. I'm not going to name them all out. In fact, some of them would actually be a little bit embarrassed if I said, but I'm so grateful for the women back in Northern Virginia who are logging on. And yeah, it means a lot to me. So let's be clear. Billy Hill told me when he asked me, and it was right before the Blue Ridge Speakers last month, Billy Hill told me in no uncertain times that he had a really hard time finding a speaker for this Sunday. So if your expectations are high, I want to lower them a little bit. I know it's funny to me, but it's graduation weekend and things like that, and clearly, like, I was just at, you know, it was my Sunday to do service. And I'm told I'm kind of an intense, serious person. So, and there's got to be depth and weight to what I hear to believe it, to make it sink into my heart. But yeah, I'll also say, if you're hoping to have a speaker, who, you know, had like the SWAT team in front of the convenience store at 2 o'clock in the morning, that wasn't my story. To be in and out of it yet. Be in and out of institutions, actually wasted probably a lot of other people's money and stuff like that, going in and out of two institutions. That wasn't my story yet, but I have my story, and it's an honest story, and it's a story that I'm grateful that on October 24th, 2008, when I walked into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, 6 p.m. on a Friday evening in downtown DC, I didn't find it necessary. I have not found it necessary to pick up a drink since. Necessary, definitely not. craved it, did a lot of work to keep that craving that way, that mental obsession, yes, but necessary. And I plan to talk a little bit about when I came really close, because I think it's important to hear those things too. I'll also say that since when anybody asked me to do service, but especially again since I was asked last month, I've been doing a lot of rehashing, like in good ways, like maybe speakers whose stories I can relate to or tell something funny that I enjoy. In fact, we were just laughing about Christie spoke at Blue Ridge Speakers last month, the day event, and was talking about his first resentment he didn't get stickers from his second, third grade teacher, and I was cracking up about, because I'm that kind of person and student, things like that. So rehashing previous times, telling my story. It's been a long time since I've been given, 45, 50 minutes to speak. So rehashing what I felt was good, whatever. And then a lot of rehearsing. And that's okay. I have some notes. I'm definitely gonna get to eventually the other chronic long-term condition that I live with, in addition to alcoholics. So I've been given a lot of tools through that to keep my brain sort of organized and things like that. But like, I'll keep emphasizing, for my own heart's sake, is like my experience is my experience, and it's one of a real commitment, dedication, hard work in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, with sponsors, with sponsees, with step work, with book work, with service. I have a note to myself, and I was encouraged, thankfully, just before the meeting started. Elle, do not rehash your childhood, because I just said a lot of rehashing. I do know from coming in these rooms that there's really nothing unique about my childhood. And yet we get, like, I just speak for me, I've gotten to a later stage in life where I didn't even realize how much effect that's had on me, in ways that are beautiful, like appreciating certain values that I definitely threw out the window when I was drinking, could care less. And then certain things that were difficult. I'm grateful for a really good conversation this past week with a woman I sponsor, as we were reading Bill's story. And we were talking about Bill Wilson's story. One thing actually I meant to check, is anybody pretty new to AA or in their first year or something like that? Okay. All right. Thank you. That helps. So I don't want to just necessarily assume, although of course, if I say anything, a terminology jargon that you're not sure, please go talk to your sponsor, ask me afterwards. But we were having a really good conversation, how in Bill Wilson's story alone, he talks about, he doesn't go back way back into his childhood, and if you read more books about him, you'll learn. I mean, he had everything he needed, just like I did growing up. But he also had some difficult times, some trauma, and he was a war veteran, and I think that's important to remember. We did not even remote he did not No one around him remotely had the language that we do, the understanding we do. He talks a little bit in his story, I won't be able to find it right away, just about what he saw serving in Europe. But let me back up. I am not a vet. I have not been in war zones like that. But understanding just again how really horrific events early on can affect us. And the truth is, in like my story, just a little snippet of my childhood. My mom ended up a single mother of, I was the oldest of four children. I started doing a lot of raising my sisters from a very early age. In ways that, again, I look back and I value because there's this like deep responsibility and commitment and love for them, and ways that were hard, being like a 7-year-old where, if diapers weren't changed and things like that, you know, but not please, like that's another thing. Like I adore my mom. We were texting before this. She had a lot on her plate, and so I did a lot of raising my sisters, and some of that probably kept my first drink at bay, like that sense of responsibility. And then of course I started drinking and I triggered that allergy, that abnormal reaction that I was aware because of family history of alcoholism, whether that matters or not, it seems to matter somewhat. I triggered that reaction at about 17 years old where I just wanted more from my first drink. But up until that point, and then it was sort of peppered for a short time. It was interlaced for a short time with staying very responsible and accountable to my mom, to my sisters and stuff. But then of course we know that that abnormal reaction, that mental obsession and like my values started really slipping, and my, you know, my behavior, my ability to show up for my mom, for my family, for my community, started really falling very low. But I'm saying all that because, well, I remember again, I just in the context of being with you on the Blue Ridge Speakers Group, I remember really getting a lot out of Teresa F. from California's talk last year. You know, I'm not, if you don't know who she is, by the way, thankfully Blue Ridge Speakers Group keeps great recordings online. Go check her out. But you know, not everybody comes into AA just like a bull in a china shop, having just absolutely stolen, you know, pillaged, whatever, and things like that. But I'm jumping ahead because then there was the 10 years, the 12 years of drinking for me. So, what it was like by the time I walked into that first meeting in 2008. The year before I turned 30, 2007, and I was on a trip with my sister Sarah, whom I will mention now and probably again, died of end-stage cirrhosis at age 29 of alcohol, you know, of liver failure due to alcoholism. So it's, you know, it's life or death for me. It's life or death for all of us, but I've been able to see what that looks like. But she wasn't in 2007. Sarah, we didn't have a sense of how badly her liver was damaged, and we went on a trip, and we went out to the Southwest, which I love, and we just drank our way through it. I actually didn't know up until that point, like what a liquid lunch meant and stuff like that. And I really didn't. But I was hanging out with Sarah, and she's like, well, I wouldn't make it sound like she's a bad influence. I mean, we just drank our way through that trip. And I was 30 years old and everything. And by the time I got back from that trip, which had kind of been a dream trip to just spend that time in the American Southwest. And I just got back from that trip and had that had definitely done some things regrettable on that trip, had definitely had a huge fight with Sarah that I regretted, where we almost, I mean, we were about to leave one or the other stranded in like halfway between Scottsdale and Phoenix, Arizona. And I definitely just had that demoralization, that pitiful sense of who am I and what I become, and not like barely being able to look at myself in the mirror, And but when I did, just hating like who I had become. And I was at that point in 2007, I was at least probably 50, 60 pounds heavier than you see me today, although apparently I had more way to go up on that. I was smoking a pack and a half to two packs of cigarettes a day. And like I said, at least for that trip, even if I had attempted prior to that to like dry up and things like that, I was drinking a lot. So something opened up in me in 2007, but my sobriety day's not till almost 2 years later. I mean, a year and 9, 10 months later, in 2008, something opened up in me that's like, you have a problem with alcohol. And I had enough evidence from this trip. So, and I knew because of my childhood and some other things, I've been a life, I'm a proud like lifetime member, at least since I was 7, 8 years old, of Al-Anon family groups. Went to Alateen before I was a before I was a teen and things like that. And that's all I'll say about other 12-step recovery programs than Alcoholics Anonymous. But what was I saying? I feel like I'm saying a lot. And I say again. A lot of 12-step. I really did lose my train of thought. Anybody, Dave, anybody?
Drinking right before, probably right before.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So I did get some, I knew that, thank you, thank you, thank you. I knew that if I think I have a problem with my drinking, I knew because of my upbringing, some other family members, and going to Al-Anon family groups, I knew that my solution was in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't go. But I tried everything else for the year plus that preceded that. And I learned during that period that definitely what I could try to start controlling my drinking, but it wasn't fun at all. It was just a lot of thinking about when I could drink, where I could drink, what I could afford to drink, what I could steal from others to drink, you know, who I could buy, get me to buy drinks, get to buy me drinks. And when I didn't control the drinking, it was just out of, it was out of hand, and it became just more pathetic, either blackouts or just sort of pathetic crying, you know, just crying, a lot of crying. What I did in 2008, but I did start seeking a power. It just wasn't a power that I was willing to admit was accessible to me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's okay. It takes what it takes. That's my story. But fortunately I was turning to a power, and that included trying different churches, denominations, even different religions in the DC area, reading books, a lot of exercise, but in a good way. It did get me outside a lot because I was taking like walks and runs outside. And in 2008, I decided to give Lent a try. That's not the particular, Catholicism is not the particular religion I was brought up in, but again, trying to find everything but AA's solution. I said, well, maybe that's the secret, you know, just give it up for 40 days. And I'm sure that probably works for an average temperate drinker or whatever it is you're trying to give up for 40 days. You lose a taste for it or something like that. You realize, you get, you step back from it. You do fill that up with, I hope, more spiritual practices. But for me, on Easter Sunday, the way to celebrate getting that 40 days was to get a case of beer and a little bit more something else that I, you know, a supplement that usually went with my drinking, and get good and drunk again. And so that began just this. I couldn't stop, I couldn't stay stopped, and it was, I wasn't banging on the bar that Easter Sunday, but I was banging on the nasty couch in my studio apartment with three cats and things, like saying, how did I get drunk again? I just wanted to reward myself with a beer or two. Eventually, through some different actions, I did find myself in that meeting on Friday, October 24th, 2008. It included going to another 12-step program, and those people saved my life and told me, don't drink, just don't drink. And I lied through my teeth for my sponsor there, no problem, no problem. And then, would leave her presence and go have a bottle or two of wine. And so just more and more just spiraling down and more hating myself. And like when you start, I think it's like we talk about that, that head full of Alcoholics Anonymous and the solution. And that includes people who are trying to help you, like this sponsor I had in this other program, just giving herself of her time, her knowledge, and just saying, don't drink because I don't drink. That belly full of booze and just like the, just feeling like a total, a-hole. my last drink, was margaritas at a Mexican restaurant in Columbia, Maryland. Sometimes, I'd have time about like what was going on that night. But what I will tell you is, again, that mental obsession that night and the physical allergy, that needing more and more tequila, no matter what, even when circumstances of that particular dinner got very grave, something happened that night was kind of becoming life or death too for somebody else. And all I could think about is there's no way that tequila is going to sit there on the table and not get drunk. I've got to do something about this. And that same person today, would not, thank goodness, thanks to the steps, the spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, would have such a different reaction today. But I got home in a kind of brownout, and because I had been seeking a power, seeking solutions, seeking 12-step recovery. I think it's actually kind of interesting to think that I even went to another 12-step program, but still wasn't willing to admit that this is where I needed to be. And now I don't want to be anywhere else. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I wasn't a bull in a china shop, but I still had my own ideas, my own stubbornness, my own self-will. And I got home that night, and I just, this is a, the God's honest truth, got home in a brownout, and I just like fell completely face down on the ground. It's not like I hadn't been praying, but I just said, God, if you're out there, I can't keep living like this. Do something, like help me do something. Again, not because I hadn't prayed before, but who knows? Who knows why that prayer got through to my heart. So the next day, when the hangover from all that tequila wore off and stuff, I at least brushed my teeth, washed my face. I hadn't showered for a couple of days or anything like that. And I went to this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I knew where to find them. The fact alone that I live in a big DC, metropolitan area, and, Dave and I were talking like, this is even before the access that we have through virtual meetings, which I'd like to emphasize, like the importance of that access that we might. Well, anyway, it, 17 years ago, I could 17, 18 years ago, I could probably almost, I knew in my neighborhood alone that there were 2, 3, 5 meetings a day I could go to. And then you expand the whole DC metro area. If I want to get on the bus, get on the metro, drive that car that actually the registration expired. I had no insurance. I didn't have a side view mirror, my first sponsor definitely had some things to say about that and driving that around, even if it was to meetings. So I did get on the metro and went to this this Women's Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and a power greater than myself had me shoot up at halftime when they offered the 24-hour, the surrender, the white chip, whatever you call it, doesn't matter. It's the intention in the rooms to like let the newcomer know that they are welcome and that you don't have to drink again if you choose. And I jumped up and I got that chip, and I'll always remember the warm hug I got from Melissa. And I don't really remember like all the women who came up and gave me hugs and gave me their numbers. But something, some surrender, some like, okay, I do need AA. This is where I need to be. And was I absolutely perfect? I have not picked up a drink since then. I've said that. I'll say it. I'll probably say it again. Did I get perfect? Of course not. and I mean perfect too, like just taking every single sponsor direction I got after that day. But I knew I needed a sponsor. I knew I needed to go a lot of meetings. I felt great in meetings. I still feel great in meetings. There's only one meeting ever where there was like a fight between the secretary and chair. One stormed up. And that was the only meeting I was just, well, maybe you learn like, oh gosh, may I never as chairperson or something act like that. It's the only meeting I ever think of where I didn't leave feeling better and something that nourished my heart, my spirit, my recovery. So I'm going to talk a little bit about like understanding step one. Once I got busy with the sponsor who took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it does have a cover on it, but we just call it the big book because the original printing was like three times this big, and also the 12 steps and 12 traditions. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I walked into that room. I haven't had a drink since, but I still didn't really understand. And I think I had some concept of how unmanageable my life had become, because I told you I was living in this studio apartment with three cats. I was paying the rent with credit card advances. Jobs, I quit jobs before they fired me. I was, you know, we say it was definitely underemployed, unemployable, can't be relied on, or one of those. I'm sure a lot of us have heard this. You're great when you're actually here, but that's implying you're not you're not here enough. And that's not sufficient. That's not acceptable. That's not how the real world works. But really understanding my powerlessness over alcohol, it took that sponsor, Lori Kay, forever grateful to her. It took her going through this book carefully. And having me, her share her own experience and having me share my own to understand that I was just defeated by whatever that little liquid was in the bottle, whether it's Jose Cuervo or Dogfish Head Ale or something like that, or Two Buck Chuck from Trader Joe's. I was powerless. And I don't know that she gave me this, but for the longest, I mean, for all these years, a boxing ring comes to mind, and like the alcohol, just no matter what, has like bigger gloves on, and like the odds are in their favor. They're the bigger fighter, and I'm just like, I'm knocked out in the first round. So as I went through that process, and that included then listening to you all and telling me ways that you were powerless, times that you had tried to take back that power over alcohol, I started to be really convinced, like I'm just a microwave boxer in the room with like the international champion in a ring with the international champion. Take some water, take a breath. Oh, I was gonna say about step one too. My parents found out when I was 1.5, 2 years old, that I'm deathly allergic to all seafood. it started with giving me some like tilapia or something that ended up with anaphylaxis in emergency room, and then continued with allergy tests, which happened as recently as earlier this year. They like to check in every decade or something. So I carry an EpiPen and things like that. But we talk about the allergy. Are we saying that I need an EpiPen with alcohol? No. But why is it that I would go to all these safeguards to not be around seafood? And like Dave's aware of that, some of the precautions we have to take. It really is too bad. Like seafood, you know, a lot of seafood is really good for you. Some good, healthy fish oil and things like that. Good source of protein. But why would I go all the safeguards for something that really could kill me pretty quickly and yet not see that with alcohol? Maybe it's a slower death. Maybe it's not. It wasn't a very slow death for my sister, Sarah, dead at 29 with end-stage cirrhosis. That's not slow. And also if it's just the alcohol, if it's just the abnormal reaction, why is it when I put down alcohol, all my problems, those ones I told you about, not having jobs, not really having a place to live that I could afford, burned relationships, definitely strained relationships with the people, the person who loves me the most, which is my mother. Why did those problems get that much worse when I put down the alcohol, to where at a couple months, well, 3 months sober, working the steps with a sponsor, going to 7+ meetings. I actually went my first couple of years, I was averaging more like 10 to 12 meetings a week, because that's where I felt safe and I wouldn't drink and I felt hope and I felt made friends. And but why is it that doing all that, meeting with a sponsor once a week, calling her every day, going to meetings, having a service position in my first home group Friday night where I gave out the chips, that 3 months sober, I absolutely wanted, like, had a plan to kill myself. Now, this is where I usually say depression, suicidal ideation, suicide attempts are very, very serious stuff. And our co-founders have a history of this stuff like that. But I'm saying that this spiritual malady and this like problem between my ears was not as simple as not picking up another drink. It took some physical clearing up, and then some mental and spiritual work. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I just remember when I was working step two with Lori, or it's more like how step to start to work me. Now that I was out and part of this AA community and getting out of my apartment, and actually ended up nannying a little bit, about, it was like spring 2009, and just taking that little girl out for walks and things like that, just really getting out of that nasty apartment, and like just the half empty stinking thinking, whatever we want to call it, I still observe that in myself all the time. Not all the time, a lot of the time today, but I have like a whole new language to where I think maybe I'm just wired that way. But I know when I say maybe I'm just wired that way, I'm limiting myself, but I have a whole new language that enters in. And if I really think in half empty, it gets to step two, I can call, I can definitely pray and say, God, I can take this away. I can call Lynn. I can call up a newcomer and listen to her problems and things like that. But that's a power that isn't me, that's going to help me be more grateful, that's going to help me stop that hamster on a wheel in my head. And I was just saying, like, being out in the community where I've like be walking along and very quickly like, oh, they don't pay me enough for this nannying job, and you know, it's really unfair that my dad made me actually sign a loan in order to help pay my rent right now, and he's such a jerk and stuff like that. And then what do you know, like someone from my home group walks by, hi, El, good to see you, and like maybe they even pull out their their chip, like, hey, because I did chips and hey, carrying around my 1 year. And what is it that's so magical about that? That it's just like, whoa, like that's a power greater than myself. And I seek that power. I seek sanity. And I'm not gonna go through all the steps, but I just kind of do wanna set it up. I said I would talk about getting close to a drink. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. When I was working step three with Lori, with all this unmanageability piling up, and including just really not like wanting to live at times, I also had like some other great, you know, trusted old timers in my life, because I was on a lot of meetings and things like that. And I didn't want to hear it, but it's like, how do I turn all this over? How do I turn up this big pile of problems? How do I turn over my nightly fear about Sarah's health and life? And they'll be like, go to bed, get up the morning, decide which meeting you're going to go to that day, you know, decide when you're going to call your sponsor, my sponsor, deciding when you're going to call me. We didn't have like a regular time, but her policy was, leave me a message, tell me that you really need to talk, or tell me that's a check-in, but call me every day. And I will call you back if you say it's, you know, if you really need to talk. And, you know, brush your teeth, have your breakfast, and keep putting left foot in front of right foot, left foot in front of right foot, left foot in front of right foot. Or my sponsor also would say, it's just, I mean, it's so practical. But if I were like, how do I turn this over? How do I believe that my life is going to get better and this is going to get resolved and blah, 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 blah. She'd just be like, okay. Elle, just look down at your feet for a moment. Okay. Just hold your, you know, tap your head so that it stays attached to that body and those feet. So practical. And believe me, I do a lot of things today. Maybe it doesn't look always like that, but just be like, it's the kind of pause and present mindedness that we talk about. Okay, I have this moment, and then I have that moment, and then I have the moment after that. I mean, more and more you'll hear me say 1 minute at a time, not even 1 day at a time, but I do like to look back over the last 24 hours. So what I was going to say, like in the context of steps 1, 2, and 3, and it does bring me to this other chronic progressive, debatably fatal, but certainly problematic disease that I have. In almost like that in early 2019, things started changing very fast in my health and in my brain and in my emotions. But when I say my brain, I don't mean just like that stinking thinking positive outlook. My ability to go from left foot, right foot. Like sometimes it literally meant left foot, right foot. And it like that became hard. Too hard for a 42-year-old who was in the best physical shape of her life, you know, exercising, eating well, sponsoring women, all this stuff, part of her family again. I was starting to have the hardest time sleeping, no matter what, despite like, I'm very proud. This is like me getting sober and becoming an adult, getting like a very good sleep hygiene. I mean, that's lasted a large part of these last 17 years, like a bedtime routine, I get up the next time. These are things I don't, I talk to people in and outside of these rooms, and it's not as much of a priority. I'm surprised, but that's a story for another day. And it began a lot of looking for medical answers through doctors, specialists, integrative healthcare providers, you know, not necessarily with medical doctor behind their name. And it certainly included like, no problem. I say no problem, but hopefully if I tell you I've like worked a really rigorous program and been sponsored and sponsoring, you know, it did include doubling down on meetings and things like that. But it was all getting very, very hard. And I didn't really get even close to the answers for many years to come. Many years, I say it was like four more years. And I look back now and I am certainly really grateful for everybody inside A, outside of A, doctors. I think Dave and I agree. There was only one guy that was like a real quack. And actually he's part of the story, but I also wrote notes. Don't say anything negative, despairing about all the people that have gotten you to this moment. Because of the sleep, I was and seeking all these different answers, and I still struggle with really poor sleep today, which is, again, just doesn't make sense when you care so much about a routine and things like that. And I do a like when I retire at night. Anyway, that I've been given a tincture, which usually is in alcohol, to like an herbal or supplement stuff in alcohol in order to help with sleep. Now I immediately ran it by my sponsor and she was like, I don't know, I don't have any experience with this. You should talk to other people. He's got a degree that allows him to say this should help you. So I'm not gonna weigh in it. And I talked to, like, my sponsor had been in Italy for several months that summer. So I called the woman who had sponsored me during that period of time, because I know it's hard to believe, but in 2019 we weren't like FaceTiming, WhatsApping, Zooming, all these things. So her being in Italy and the time difference and stuff, she's like, you'll get a sponsor while I'm away this summer, and you know, we'll try and connect when we can. But I called that woman, look, long story short, I got to a point, I was actually at a different medical provider's office, and I had that tincture with me. I wanted this medical provider's opinion on it. And I was sitting there in the room by myself, and I had that tincture with me, and I hadn't slept well for days. And I felt so frustrated by the ways my body, brain, and mind were changing. And I said, I'm going to down this whole tincture right now. And it was like in my hand. And thankfully, the second thought was, you got to run down here and pour this out. And then I told that other medical provider, I'm sorry, I really need to go. Her name's Robin. I really need to go. I got to go now. And like threw the bottle in her recycling and got on the phone and started calling all those same women and then some as I headed down to a clubhouse. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So thank goodness a clubhouse had a 3:30 meeting and then a 5 o'clock meeting and then a 6 o'clock meeting and then an 8:30 PM meeting. And so I started calling those women. I got to a meeting and I sat in that, and they did start calling me back, but I just sat in that clubhouse as long as I needed to. And, you know, did the burning desire at the end, all these things. For me, it was a little bit of swallowing my pride. Like, I really came close to drinking today. And, you know, that was scary enough for me. Maybe it wasn't, you know, a bottle of whiskey, but it was enough for this sober alcoholic who thought that that was looking like the only way out of this real lack of sleep. In the last 5-10 minutes I have left to, long story short, so what was going on with me all those years, that different people were trying to diagnose and figure out, and to some degree is, well, anyway, I have young onset Parkinson's disease, and it is by the grace of God, who does give such wonderful, you know, talented medical providers, speech therapists, all these things, that I can stand up here today. I'm on, I'm actually on a lot of medication to get through the average day. And it's hard. It's really hard. I'm not here to talk about Parkinson's, but it is so much more than a tremor or something like that. It's a very complicated disease, and it's chronic, it's progressive, and I told you earlier, it's most people die. It's not like Parkinson's, like Alzheimer's, that they know so far is going to just eat at your brain, but as your body has a harder time dealing with stress and viruses and things like that, it's Parkinson's related complications. So, and what I've known to be true in that is that I have got to stay sober and I've got to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't, y'all, when I see that, I don't even really understand that. And yet here I am. And, you know, I could have, I don't know. It's just, first off, it's just very practical. Like, why would I have a neurodegenerative disease and drink on that? I don't, you know, but AA is not, you know, AA is not the beautiful neurology team that I have had for about the last 2 years. That's a whole team and includes, you know, weekly to monthly different checkups and constantly checking in on symptoms and stuff in a way that needs to be monitored. But through it all, AA's been there, and not even because I remember when we were looking at this diagnosis, like Dave helped me and got on the wire like people across the country, and not because it was just like, oh yeah, call Cheryl in Oregon, she has Parkinson's, she's not young, or do this stuff like that. We have a lot of experience in these rooms and things like that. I'm getting a look from somebody that's like, maybe today's the day. but I certainly know that I connected with a 78 year, well, I have a dear friend, I haven't visited her lately, but she's 75 with Parkinson's in a nursing home, sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a new friend, 78 years old. I just started talking to her this week, and she's worried about some symptoms and things, like sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I have some lovely women who call me sponsor and just exhibit compassion and patience for me in ways that I don't give myself sometimes. So I guess the message is, like, it doesn't matter what it is. We can stay sober. I do not, when I was telling Lynn recently, like, nothing's wasted in God's economy, but I was telling her a week and a half ago, is like, I don't want to hear about your contractor's late problems. Those are not problems. I'm sorry. nothing's wasting. I had another sponsor. Nothing's wasting God's economy, L. In God's economy, or something like that. But I don't live my day. I live my day trying to, a large part of my day trying to walk through and manage symptoms, but I don't live my day thinking I've got so many problems. I live my day like I've been telling you, going to bed at the same time, waking up the same time, starting with prayer, starting with meditation, starting a new gratitude list with the women I sponsor and the woman she sponsors, planning out my day, planning out my meetings, doing service in those meetings. That's, and then some other things. I've been working part-time as an after-school tutor, part-time. I can do about 2-3 hours max, and then it gets hard, and I'm not where, like, I want these little kids. They're pretty brutal. I want these little kids seeing me symptomatic, starting to tremor, things like that. So I think with that in mind, what I want to do, and that's perfect, is end with something from the Alcoholics Anonymous 12 and 12, which I'm so grateful it does reflect versus these bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, newly, what? No, I don't want to. Thank you, though. Not tonight. But does reflect these these, well, especially Bill Wilson, he wrote it, but these experiences starting to stay sober through the ups and downs, and not just like, well, there's nothing wrong with being like, we're sober and we're going to save people. We needed that. But then starting to work through intimate relationships, having children, having miscarriages, having illnesses, getting cured, losing people, people we love, like Abby Thatcher, who, you know, just could not stay sober, and work with the medical community. So this book reflects those experiences, that staying sober one day at a time, left foot, right foot, living the program, carrying the message. So I used to tell you about one thing, but there's something else I just decided I did want to mention that's not related. And it's another way in which I'm grateful for Dave. We take a meeting into a detox and treatment center every other Sunday. This is kind of service work that Dave's introduced me to. And we would have done that today, but we decided we needed plenty of time to get down here and things like that. So is that part of my AA resume? No, so much as just like the things I do that I've been doing at least for 6, 7, 8 years. And then some since I've known Dave. It's just like, because it worked. So let me just wrap up. I am aware that I'm down the last minute or two. Hey, I didn't stop short of my time, but I want to read a little bit from step 12 in the 12 steps and 12 traditions. Now comes the biggest question yet. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? Can we love the whole pattern of living as eagerly as we do the small segment of it we discover when we try to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety? Can we bring the same spirit of love and tolerance into our sometimes deranged family lives that we bring to the AA group? Can we actually carry the AA spirit into our daily work? Can we find a new joy of living in trying to do something about all these things? Further, and I'm just kind of, I'm picked some different questions that are most pertinent to me today. How should we come to terms with seeming failure or success? Can we now accept and adjust to either without despair or pride? Can we accept poverty, sickness, loneliness, and bereavement with courage and serenity? Can we steadfastly content ourselves with the humbler yet sometimes more durable satisfactions when the brighter, more glittering achievements are denied us? The AA answer to these questions about living is yes, all these things are possible. We know this because we see monotony, pain, and even calamity turn to good use by those who keep on trying to practice AA's 12 steps. And I'm one of those people, and grateful to be sober. Thank you for saving my life. Thanks again to this group for having me.